On this episode of the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, Creepy Ken and I talk about the most infamous alien abduction UFO case ever, the 1975 Travis Walton incident. And Edgegrave Dave reviews the brand new I Know What You Did Last Summer 2025. So let's get it started.
Do aliens exist and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I am Ghost Joe.
And I'm Creepy Ken.
Yeah, man. So listen, before we get into this conversation about the Travis Walton incident, listen, fire in the sky freaking scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about everything to do with the case. But before we do that, let's check in with Edgegrave Dave with a horrible review.
Horrible review with Edgegrave Dave.
Hey guys, Edgegrave Dave here. And I've got a question for you. Have you ever been in a situation where a certain movie line might pop up in your head, or could be a pop culture reference, even a line from one of your favorite songs? Maybe it's a generational thing. I think that Ghost Joe, Creepy Ken, the Nat Man, and John know exactly what I'm talking about. Let me give you an example. Let's just say that you're talking about the summertime, you know? And while summertime rolls around, you're scrolling through your phone and you're planning all these awesome things that you can do. Maybe it could be an awesome trip or a vacation, a weekend getaway, or just something awesome that you want to do, like go down to the beach. And you have that conversation. Well, last summer we did this, so maybe I should do that. Or, well, you know, last summer we did this, so I think maybe this is a good idea. Well, I've realized every single time that I have that conversation for almost the past 30 years, what pops up in my head has always been the same. Well, last summer I know, and I say, well, yeah, I know what you did last summer. But I don't know if they know what I did this summer, and I just bore witness to, I know what you did last summer, 2025, that is. And you know, we have to do that now, because lately, they've been naming these legacy sequels or requels, whatever you want to call them, with the exact OG original title. But in any event, I saw another one on its opening night. So here's a very special Edgegrave warning spoiler alert. Because if you don't want to know what happens just yet, I would suggest hitting the pause button, continuing on with the podcast, and maybe coming back to it a little bit later. So where to begin? You know, back in 1997, the original I Know What You Did Last Summer was a pretty big deal. It had a star-studded cast with Jennifer Love Hewitt, Freddie Prinze Jr., Ryan Phillippe, and Sarah Michelle Gellar. They were all stars in their own right, and that really drove people to the movie. The same with its sequel in 1998, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, which did have Brandy and the returning actors of Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. Fast forward to nearly 30 years later, when I first saw the poster for this thing on the wall of my local movie theater, I was very intrigued, and I looked up nothing about it. I didn't want to know anything about it. I just wanted to go into this one cold and try to figure out, what can this possibly be about? How could there be a continuation? What are they going to do here? One of the things that was a nice touch on its opening night, anyway, was they handed out postcards. Welcome to Southport. That's the fictitious town where the movie did take place. On the back, it's white with the print of where you can send the postcard and bloody handprints. On the front, you had several postcards with different locations in the movie and the fisherman with the hook in different spots where you can find it. I mean, freebies are kind of a nice touch that they're doing nowadays. For Karate Kid Legends, they did hand out wristbands. Lord knows they sell popcorn buckets for almost every movie nowadays, and they're all north of about $50. But I do have to say that the Darth Vader one that I have that goes with a button when you press on it, totally worth it for me, guys.
The first warning that I want to tell you about is you really do need to see the original film to understand this movie. Certainly the sequel, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, can't hurt. In the original film, we have a bunch of teenagers that accidentally kill a pedestrian. At least they think they do. Or did they? And then fast forward 1 year later, someone sure knows what they did last summer, and they're trying to pick them off one by one. It is a fisherman slicker person with a hook for a hand. I never really thought it was the best movie in the world. It's not that I hated it. I just like things maybe a little bit better where I didn't really want to rewatch it a lot, let's just say. But I certainly felt that I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream really did help to revitalize the slasher genre in the late 90s. So it was a very important film, and the actors, like I had mentioned, really did help revitalize the genre. So that was great. I just always felt that the story really always had a great premise, and you do get to really dive into the guilt of what they had done. I like the character development in that way. That was always very strong, but I always felt that the horror factor was always sort of lacking. I always want to see a little bit more of the killer, and I really want to see a little bit more action sequences that the killer had done. Sometimes they would cut away, or sometimes it just wasn't enough for me, really. And it's not that I need action all the time, but I'm always all about balance, and I always felt that there could have been just a little bit more. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, this film is the best out of the three of them, and they sure did pick up on the horror factor, so that I was very happy with. But how does it hold up as a whole? Well, let's find out. So some facts for you guys. In 2014, they were originally going to choose that time to make another film. This was going to be a pure reboot that had no connection to the original film or the other installments. Following the cancellation of the television series, which was in 2021, they tried again to pitch it to Sony Pictures. And this time they got it off the ground where it was going to connect to the original film. This time around, we do have some actors that I personally never heard of, and it was nice to see some fresh faces. We have Madeline Klein, we have Chase Sue Wonders, Jonah Hart King, Tyreek Withers, Sarah Pigeon, Billy Campbell, Austin Nichols, and returning as advertised, Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. And this had come out right here at the time of this recording in the summer, July of 2025.
Now for some of the premise of the plot. Danica and Teddy are getting married. They are joined by their friend Ava and her ex-boyfriend Milo. And we also have a girl named Stevie. They're all friends from high school. And Stevie happens to work in Ray's bar, the very same Ray that is Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character from the original film. It's 4th of July weekend. They want to go watch the fireworks. We're taken to the same curvy road off the cliff that overlooks the ocean from the original film. Now, they are drinking in the middle of the road, which is wrong. But as I'm sitting there, guys, almost out of nowhere, a car comes, an accident is caused, and it's now hanging off the guardrail, and this person is in serious peril. I can't help but to think what they really did all that wrong here. For starters, they helped everything that they could to try to save the person in the car. They even called the cops. What they did that was wrong is similar to the original film. They fled the scene. But in my opinion, I'm really pissed off. They did everything that they could to try to help this person. And a year later, they start seeing notes of, I know what you did last summer. Why? Because they called the cops and tried to help the person? I'm not trying to sound heartless here, guys. But when you find out who the person is driving that car, you're going to feel even less bad about this.
But of course, there is an ulterior motive, and this happens to be a plot device that is used for the motive of the killer. This is very interesting. This is where things really go into high gear. And I'll be honest with you, usually with legacy sequels, I do prefer the OG when it comes to the quality of the film, and I usually look at it as a nice bonus. In this case, this film has almost every element that I wish that the original film could have been. The kills and the stalking anticipation is done very, very well here with quality. I really like the balance of the story, and I really like what was shown and the switching back and forth between it. If you're really looking for a suspenseful story and having some gore in the scenes, not to mention that the scare factor, it really is all there. And they happen to do a brilliant move in connecting it to the original story. You will see how Jennifer Love Hewitt's character of Julie James and how Ray, Freddie Prinze Jr., are involved. I'm going to stop telling you what happens from there because I really don't want to give too much away. I really think that they did everything that they can with this continuation and put a lot of thought into it. I'm just really irked by the way that initial accident had happened because I know that it's the reason why everything's going on. But again, I would have maybe gone about that scene a little bit differently. And this has a really interesting and bizarre, you're going to see how you feel about it, ending. I got a big question mark on that and where the series can go from there. The film overall does have a great feel to it. It touches upon nostalgia while giving something new at the same time. It's got great music. I love the improvement on the costume. You can sort of see the person's face in the original two films. And here we just have a black face that's covered in like some kind of mesh. Not only are there kills that are a bit more quality and have some creativity, there's also a little bit more other than the hook. And I really like that. There are some awesome surprises in this movie. Certainly not going to tell you what happens there, but it's definitely a nice nod to the original film. And you'll be applauding for those when you see it. So overall, definitely worth seeing. I was pleasantly surprised. This is a film, as I have said, that is the best out of all three films. And this is coming from someone that was never really in love with the original film to begin with. Again, not that it was a bad film. If anything, it was a good introductory film to horror as something that didn't really show maybe too much and had a great story. And it had an age demographic with people that can identify with the characters. But this coming in 2025, I think that people are looking for a little bit more edginess and a little bit more rawness. It certainly does achieve that on all levels. So I'm going to give this one a 3.5 out of 5 graves. There are certain reasons why I won't go a little bit higher. I really like the emotion. I really like the graphics of this film, of what is shown. But again, there's a couple of small issues that I have with it. I don't think it's going to take away from your enjoyment level of this one whatsoever. And if this is still playing by the time that this review comes out, go ahead and check it out. And not only did I see this movie with my daughter Morgan Edgegrave, but she also thought that this was the best out of the three of them as well. We finally have a movie that has the Nicole Kidman monologue from a certain movie theater company before the movie starts that has, "We come to this place for magic," and then ends with, "We make movies better," with all three versions of it. Well, we always recite that line before every movie that we see, almost line by line. And yeah, there's about three versions of it now. So that's pretty funny. We were laughing during that part. Ha ha ha! Back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thank you so much for that awesome, horrible review, Edgegrave. Yeah, I got to get myself out there and see that movie. My daughter had actually just seen that with my wife. and they seem to have liked it. So I definitely have to check that out. Or maybe I'll just wait for it to come out on streaming. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I'd like to see that. I'm also a Jennifer Love Hewitt fan. So, yeah. Anyway, let's get on with our conversation about the 1975 Travis Walton incident. You know, if you're a paranormal fan, you don't know who Travis Walton is. But if you do or if you don't, we might have some extra things for you about the guy. So, yeah. So we're going to, I guess we'll get right into it, man.
For me, the Travis Walton case is kind of what kicked off my whole interest in the UFO thing and in the abduction thing, because it was that movie, Fire in the Sky, is literally nightmare fuel for me. When I was a kid and I watched that movie, oh, dude, it that shit is creepy. It's creepy.
I saw that in the movies, and that scared the crap out of me, man. I think I came out in 1993, Fire in the Sky. So I was, man, I was my daughter's age. I was 12 years old, 12 or 13 when that movie came out. And yeah, man, that movie is nuts, you know?
So Joe, did you know they're rebooting it?
What? Why would they, why would they do that?
Walton wants it done.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into later on. We're going to get into the differences between the movie and the actual events, because, of course, Hollywood does their Hollywood magic and, you know, amps things up a lot. So we're going to get into the differences in a little bit on that, too. But what he wants it, redone to his specs, like his standards.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. All right. You know what? I could be okay with that.
It's kind of going to go. Yeah, it's kind of going to go with a couple of things in that we're going to talk about tonight. At least one thing that I want to point out. It's going to kind of go hand in hand with that. So, yeah, man, it's pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool. So let me start it off a little bit, right? So Travis Walton was born February 10th, 1953 in Snowflake, Arizona, a very small rural town. Which actually he still lives to this day. He still lives in Snowflake, Arizona. So, so all this hoopla and stuff like that, we're going to put that out there too. Like, because there are a lot of people that say that it was a hoax and that it was all for this and for that. But yeah, it might've, all this stuff might've made him a household name and famous, but if he's still living in Snowflake, Arizona, it's not like he's a billionaire, you know, from his experiences. So, you know, that's what I'm going to say about that. But so basically he was a logger on a 7-man crew led by Mike Rogers. Mike Rogers was his future brother-in-law and best friend at the time. And they were in a, they were doing this contract for, what was it? The U.S. Forest Service. And it was a thinning contract to, I guess, thin out the forests, I guess. I'm not really even sure what that actually is. But it was this big contract that they were involved in. And they were done. It was November 5th, 1975. And the location was the Turkey Springs area in the National Forest in Arizona. And after work, the crew was all in the pickup truck together and stuff. And I guess they were going home or going out or whatever. And they noticed this hovering, glowing disc kind of in the distance. So, of course, you know, just like pretty much all of us would, you know, they went to go see what it was. And they saw that it was a UFO. And when they couldn't, pretty much just like the movie, if you've ever seen the movie, this is actually fairly true, where Travis just kind of got out because he wanted to see what was up with it. He was very curious, got out of the car, and he went over to it to see. And from one of the interviews that I was watching earlier about him, he just figured that the thing was just going to fly away. You know, he didn't think anything of it. He wasn't scared of it. You know, he just figured, all right, well, this thing is just going to fly away, you know? And then what happened was he was standing under it and a beam of light shot out from the bottom of this UFO. And it like kind of paralyzed Travis and it pushed him back a little bit. And it pushed him back so hard that it looked like he got hit really, really hard on the floor, on the ground. And of course his crew got, you know, all scared and upset and worried and stuff. And they drove away and left his ass.
That was Mike that was driving, like his best friend.
Now, before we get into it, Ken, what would you do in that situation? Honestly, I'd like to think that I would try and help Travis. You know what I mean? Like, I would like to think that I would be like, no, I mean, I'm not going to leave the guy, you know. But if you see something like that,
I can't, because if you talk to my wife, she's going to tell you otherwise. I'd like to sit here and say, oh, yeah, it's my best friend. I'd jump in there. But there's a story. There's a couple of stories that my wife would argue with. Like when we went on our honeymoon, okay, we were out in the ocean, three sheets to the wind, had one of those wakeboards, and we're drinking. And her back is faced the water, and my back was faced the beach. So I don't know, about 5 feet from her, out of nowhere, this big, huge carpet comes out of the water. And then I realized the huge carpet has eyes and it's like 5 feet from her. So what do? I run and yell, Amber, Amber, there's some big thing behind you. I'm gone. I'm already in the shore, man. Like, I'm not messing around. You know what I'm saying, Joe? Like, if it has teeth bigger than me, I'm not messing with it. And if it can float and shoot lasers at people, I'm done, man. You know, like, so I'd like to act like I'm a big, tough guy, which all these guys, we're all big, tough loggers. You know what I mean? But
right, they're loggers. I mean, how much tougher can you get? Yeah. I mean, aren't loggers like, isn't there like their nicknames? Are they roughnecks? Like, they're like these, like, real, like, burly, like, manly men.
And you know? The funny thing is, like, even with, like, my situation, you know, I consider myself a pretty manly man, you know what I mean? Like, I fought professionally, like, for 20 years of my life. I traveled all over the place and fought professionally. I'm not really afraid of any man, you know, but unless he's got bigger teeth than me, then I'm out, man. I'm out. You know, like, I'm not playing around with that. So,
sure.
I probably would have left. I probably would have left, Joe. I would have been like, nah, I'm gone.
So, remind me never to go on a UFO hunt with you, man.
Yeah, dude, because I'll turn these trucks on quick, man, and I'll be out of there. Like, I don't play around.
So basically what happened, right, was, I guess Mike, after a little bit, he got, Mike Rogers had gotten a little bit of a conscience, and he's like, yo, we got to go back, you know? So after like a big, you know, argument in the truck, and, you know, cause the other guy's like, hell no, we're not going back, you know? And he's like, we have to go back. It's Travis. We have to go. Cause you got to remember too, this happened in 1975. Travis was born in 1953. He was only 22 years old. Yeah. He was a kid when this happened. And Mike was responsible for him,
yeah,
you know, because Mike was the older guy, you know. And so Mike's like, no, we're going back. So they all drove back. That's one of the misconceptions about the movie, I believe, because I believe in the movie, not all of them went back to get him. But in actuality, they all did go back to try and get him. And when they went back to the site, he was gone.
Just gone.
Yeah. So if you want to take it over from here, Ken.
So they went back to the town and they went to the police, and a pretty large scale search operation happened for him. The police, of course, thought the men were lying. They thought that they were fabricating this, you know, like we were talking about. These are big, burly men. They're out there working together closely. Of course, there's going to be disagreements. Of course, there's going to be strife sometimes, you know, which actually wasn't the case with this crew. This crew got along pretty well. But it happens, man, you know. I've seen it in my own workplace, you know. So the cops were really zeroed in on these six other guys. They wanted to know where the body was, who murdered him, everything. They were convinced that he was murdered. So while this is going on, the next day they went in with 50 searchers, helicopters, horses, tracking dogs. They could not find even a footprint after he was missing, like any leading anywhere. He was just gone. They searched for 5 days, which is a pretty long time. You know, I think, I mean, I've heard him cut it shorter than that, you know? But then on November 10th, at 12:05 AM, Travis called his sister from a payphone that was by a gas station. And, his brother-in-law actually answered the phone. Excuse me. And he said, "Hey, this is Travis." He said, "You need to come get me." And he didn't believe him because, of course, they were getting calls from everybody at that point. But he said, "No, this is really Travis." So he said, "Tell me where you're at." And he told him. And they went and picked him up. And he had a big beard at the time, like 5 days. You know, he was gone for 5 days. And Travis didn't exactly think that he was gone that long at first. He thought it was still the same night. And it was 5 days later. So after all this happened, of course, you know, there's no murder investigation, no anything, but they were asking questions and Travis was really reluctant to answer anything. He was kind of messed up, like psychologically, as you can imagine. I mean, hell, I was messed up from the big water beast that came out of the water for a couple hours, you know, like couldn't imagine a UFO. Jeez. But yeah, so basically they started asking questions and Travis started telling them what was going on. He said he only really had like 2 to 3 hours of consciousness from the entire 5 days that he was gone. He said that there was a metallic table they put him on. He felt like he was in a hospital. He remembers seeing 3 short, pale humanoids with large brown eyes. But he also remembers seeing other humans, too, that were kind of like leading him, kind of like doctors. Of course, he tried to fight back and get out of there, but he couldn't really. I mean, he scared the heck out of the beings that were there, he said. But this, he did get loose, I think, one time and was running through the corridors trying to find a way out. And he said this ship was just full of corridors and all this crazy technology and viewing areas. And the other thing he said he saw was taller, blonde, blue-eyed beings who seemed to be more human, which I think he's talking about the Nordics, which is pretty interesting. So there was quite a bit of physical evidence as well. I mean, he had the 5 days of beard growth. He had lost 10 to 12 pounds. And he had mysterious puncture wounds. So, they did check, for drug tests. He was negative. He had no ketones in his urine, despite allegedly being starving for 5 days. So, yeah, that's what I got.
And also, one thing about it too, is that this gas station that he was found in was 30 miles away from where he disappeared. You know, so it's not like he could have walked 30 miles like that, like just, you know, and he had no memory of how he got there. He was disoriented when they first found him. You know, and like you said, one of the things that he said that is, and I'll sprinkle things in here and there, as far as the movie, these aliens were, in the movie, they were hostile. You know, they were doing all these like horrific things to him, where when he talks about it, he sees it as almost like it was a medical examination, like they were trying to help him or like fix him more than trying to hurt him.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and yeah, the humanoid thing, I've heard other people that say that they've gotten abducted saying the same type of thing. So you wonder if all of this actually did happen, if these are humanoids or humans, I mean, is it the government? Is it, or are they hybrids? Or is it, you know, like you don't, it's a crazy thought, but I mean, it's not so far-fetched really anymore. I mean, because this is what a lot of people say, you know, about it. But he had seen these human-like figures. They placed a mask over his face and stuff. And, now let's talk a little bit about what some people think is possibly why they might have fabricated this. Now, there's a lot of people that say that, you know, oh, it was a hoax, right? Now, why would they do a hoax? Is it for 15 minutes of fame? A lot of people say no. What one of the theories behind why they might make all of this up is that the crew was working under this contract for the U.S. Forest Service. The deadline was mid-November 1975. On October 20th, now mind you, they were running very, very behind on this contract to finish what they had to finish. Mike Rogers, on October 20th, which the supposed abduction happened on November 5th. On October 20th, Mike Rogers submitted a formal letter admitting that they may miss the deadline. And if they miss the deadline for this contract, they owe money. You know, it's financial penalties for them missing this contract. So a lot of people think that they made this up because the only way out of this kind of contract is through an act of God. And what people say, what skeptics say, is that they thought this up thinking, all right, well, this could be considered an act of God because it was beyond their control. You know, what happened to Travis? So that's a big thing, you know, a very, very big theory about it.
It's pretty funny.
Had you heard about that too?
Yeah, and it's pretty funny that timeline actually lines up perfectly because it was November 5th whenever the incident happened. And then November 10th was the day that he came back out. So it may have created just enough of a wave to get them out of that spot of trouble they were in.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, mind you, look, I of all people would want this to be totally real. I mean, you know, it's an alien abduction. I mean, this is the stuff that we read up on, you know, this is like, you know, like what me and you talk about, like, of course you want this stuff to be true.
Yeah.
You know, we want this stuff to be true more than anything. There's a lot of inconsistencies here though.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same token, the six men had also taken polygraph examinations and had passed.
Yep.
But mind you, we don't know what the questions they were asked were. You know, the questions could have been, did you kill, you know, Travis Walton? If they said no, they wouldn't be lying. They didn't. You know, so it really, I think it kind of depends on the questioning, you know, of the polygraph as well.
To me, you know, polygraphs don't really hit my sweet spot, man, because first of all, they're not admissible in court because they're highly subjective. You know what I mean? There's ways to cheat it. There's ways to get around it. So on both sides, you know, like not just one way to get around it. It's just not scientifically accurate. It's really not. So I always love when they throw in they passed a polygraph or they failed a polygraph. That's such old technology. It doesn't even matter. The other thing that I really love whenever skeptics throw in is the name Philip J. Klass. He's annoying. Yeah, he's annoying, man. He was an aviation journalist who stuck his nose into these cases and did everything that he could to debunk them under... Okay, so let me tell you about Philip J. Klass just for a second. Philip J. Klass is the modern-day version of Project Blue Book. He was paid by the government to go in and debunk cases on purpose. That was his job. It is proven. And anytime his name is thrown in, by default for me, it's just like a polygraph test. Like, I don't even listen to a word the guy says because... He just, I feel like if you're going to be a skeptic, you've got to walk a fine line. Like you've got to, it's okay to be skeptical. It's perfectly fine. But you also have to try to see both sides. You can't just go into it being completely skeptical or you miss the other half. You know what I mean? Of what could be. So even if this is a totally fabricated incident, hoax, I still love it because, first of all, they're better storytellers than I am, you know, and it's one hell of a tale that they've told. And to get 7 people all on board to tell the same story and to keep the same thing for how long now? I mean, 50 years? It's pretty damned incredible.
Actually, I think we were about to say the same exact thing. Were you going to talk about Mike Rogers?
Yeah, man.
Okay. So in 2021, Rogers had actually publicly recanted his belief in Walton's story, stating none of us actually saw Travis get abducted and that speaks volumes. That's quoted straight from him. So, but then he recanted his recant. So
he's done that 3 times. So his other one is he publicly came out and said, I, Michael H. Rogers, being of sound and rational mind, do hereby give notice that I am no longer to be considered a witness to Travis C. Walton's supposed abduction of November 5th, 1975. So I did some digging on that. And what I found was pretty interesting. Do you know why he recanted and kept going back and forth? Well, it's because of the movie, the new movie that Walton's trying to push. Walton wanted to cut Rogers out of that movie. And when you ain't making money anymore from other people's journeys, then you tend to get a little grumpy. So that's what I found out. It was all right during this time when he started talking to these execs and Michael Rogers wanted to be part of that. And Walton cut him out because he didn't want anybody. He wanted it to be his story and nobody else's. So take money out of somebody's pocket and you might get smacked a few times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense, you know, but then why would he keep going back and forth? You know, maybe Walton was like, listen, you know, I'm trying to get you in the book. They don't want you in the movie or, you know, they still have to have somewhat of a relationship, I would assume. You know,
yeah.
I don't know where Mike Rogers lives at the moment, but if Travis still lives in the same exact town that he did when he was 22 years old, I'm sure Rogers probably doesn't live much further, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's small town guys, you know? And So that's, you know, take it what you need, you know, what you think. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about the Travis Walton? I mean, it made for one of the scariest movies of all time. Let's put it like that. It was definitely one of the scariest movies ever, I think. That the way it was portrayed. That and did you ever see The Fourth Kind? That movie was scary as hell too.
Yeah, that movie's great.
Excellent movie. Found footage, amazing movie. So yeah, but Fire in the Sky was, You know, that's my childhood right there, man. I mean, like I said, I saw it when I was 12 in the movie theater. And I'll tell you, my daughter is 12, but I don't think I would ever show it to her because she probably wouldn't sleep for 3 months after watching that. Because that movie is scary, man. Just the look of the evil look of the aliens in that.
Yeah.
And the needle in the eye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh. Brutal. And the body, the casing that they put over the bodies.
Yeah.
In the movie, do you remember? Oh. Did you ever hear of the tower theory that has to do with the Walton case?
No.
Well, there's a theory out there that someone discovered that there is a fire tower right there, and right by where this incident happened. It's called Gentry Fire Lookout Tower, and it's feet from where the men say he left. And on this 70-foot tower is a huge generator with a spotlight, and it's a super bright spotlight. And allegedly, the tower matches the men's sighting better than an actual flying saucer would have. So it's kind of an interesting theory, and I don't think a lot of people know that the tower is out there. But you could see, even if this is a hoax, it'd be kind of hard to dupe six other people unless, and how would you do that by yourself? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. Like I said, like, I really want it to be legit, you know. The contractual stuff that they were involved in does sound like they could have been desperate enough to come up with a crazy thing like that. But I don't know why you would say aliens instead of just saying like he was abducted or something, or he's missing or lost or something like that, you know. Why you would go further and say something so out of the ordinary, lost, you know, like that. That's where it kind of is a little strange for me. But listen, man, I'm all for it. If you know, I'm good with believing in this, you know, but it was national. Yeah. It was awarded by National Enquirer as the best US UFO case of the year. By the National Enquirer.
Each man got a check of $5,000.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. That'll help him out, especially back then, right?
They should give us an award for best podcast of the year and give us, you know, some $5,000.
Anybody listening right now, if you've ever witnessed a UFO or been abducted by aliens, because I've talked to people on this podcast that have been abducted by aliens, and that get actually regularly visited by extraterrestrials. If any of this stuff has ever happened to you or you know anybody, give us a call at 845-600-0744, ghostjoeny@gmail.com. Let us know about it, man. You know, because it's fascinating. It's fascinating what, you know, pretty much anything about it. As far as the movie goes, though, it's funny, as far as the movie goes, my favorite part of the movie is the very, very, very last part of the movie when Travis and Mike revisit the site. And Mike said, "Aren't you scared of being here?" And Travis is like, "Why?" He goes, "Aren't you scared that like they're going to take you again?" And Travis goes, "No. I don't think they liked me very much, you know, because he caused so much havoc." You know, like,
have you ever seen a UFO?
I never have, man. I've always wanted to. I honestly, I live upstate.
Yeah.
I live in upstate New York. It's very, very dark out here. I work on the midnight shift, so I drive at night all the time. I'm always looking up in the sky. Always, man. I'm always looking. I'm like, I'm going to see something and I'm going to stop my car. I'm going to get a nice picture of it or a nice video of it, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm doing it. And if they happen to beam me up, then whatever, they beam me up, you know, but I want to do it. You know, I definitely, that's one thing. I've had ghost experiences. I've never seen a cryptid either. So I don't know if I'd love to experience that, because some of them are quite frightening, you know? But I definitely would love to witness a UFO. I'm actually thinking maybe one day, because I believe that there's one of those CE5 circles around here. Yeah. And I'd love to like just go and just see what it's about for a couple times. And then I'd come back here and report it to everybody on this wonderful podcast about my experience. Because, it's an interesting thing, you know, and some of the people that I've talked to that have been there are very reputable people. And they said they're like, yo, man, I wouldn't have believed it if it didn't happen to me.
So I've witnessed three UFO really? Encounters. But yeah, I've seen three. One of them was with my wife. We were on our way up to Ohio. We were still in South Carolina, and it was about 4:30 in the morning. And we're just driving along I-26 going west. And I'm telling you what, man, the sky lit up and this bright green, like bright green object just crossed the sky right in front of us. Like, and it was moving, man. And I've never seen, first of all, that color. I've never seen anything that color. It was like a fluorescent green. And we watched that, and we didn't even have words for what we just saw. We were like, did you see that? You know what I mean? Like, it was unbelievable. And yeah, it just went, and then it just disappeared.
Wow, man. That had to have been insane to see, man. You know what? I talk a big, big game, but I don't know, bro. Like I said, I'd love to see it, but at the same time, it's got to be a little bit unnerving to see something that you really just don't understand, you know, especially like when you're watching it for a little bit and you're like, you know what, that's not a plane, that's not a drone or a helicopter.
So yeah, I saw that one, my wife and I saw that one a few years back here. The neighborhood went crazy, and everybody in the neighborhood, of course, that don't believe the things that I believe, started calling me and freaking out one evening. And they're like, dude, you got to look outside. Huge triangle, really low. You could see the whole thing. It looked like a boomerang. I think it had 12 lights on it, took pictures of it. Pretty crazy. The whole neighborhood was going nuts for about a week about it. And then I saw another one in a field years ago. But I was drinking pretty heavy that night, so it could have been a helicopter. Just saying.
That's a big difference right there, sir.
It is, but you know what? It wasn't. I know it wasn't a helicopter. There was no noise, no sound. It was just a really weird. It was cool because there were five of us that were there, and we were having a fire and chilling out, and in the field behind us, this thing just comes down, hovers above this field. I remember, I'll never forget seeing it was a wheat field, and I'll never forget seeing the wheat moving, but there was no sound of this thing. And we were all just like, wow. You know, of course we reported it to MUFON. Yeah. And they came out and did interviews and all kinds of stuff and never told us anything. Never. I don't know whatever happened with it.
You knew that John Wright, who is the Wright Headspace guy that does our wonderful podcast with us, he's a MUFON guy. He's a volunteer for MUFON.
Yeah, you gotta. It's pretty.
Yeah, he's an investigator.
It's pretty in depth. The investigator, the field guide that you have to study, and the test that you have to take. I looked into it myself, and. It's pretty in depth, man. You've got to know your stuff.
Yeah, John's a very smart guy, so I could definitely understand how he was able to do that. But yeah, no, and he's got a lot of, you know, if anybody hasn't watch some of the bonus episodes that I've been putting out. He puts out some great content, man. He did this whole series about whistleblowers, where he did a whole episode on different whistleblowers like David Grush and a bunch of other guys. So definitely check those out because it's super interesting. And John is a very, very smart guy. And he's not a skeptic. I would say he's a realist more than anything. You know, like he might call himself a skeptic, possibly, but not in the bad way that everybody kind of says, oh, it's a skeptic, like, oh, they don't believe in anything. No, he does research, and you know, he comes to a conclusion about the research that he does. And that's what he believes, you know?
No, there's a huge difference between a realist and a skeptic, I think. You know, skeptics are, in my mind, very single-minded, very closed off, and they're just looking for that one part. But a realist, like you said, will actually do their research and dig deep, and whatever side that research falls on is the side they believe. And I much rather have a realist investigate anything that I see than a skeptic, for sure.
As far as this Travis Walton case, it definitely is super interesting. And there's a lot to it. I mean, this man's been doing interviews since the 70s about this. And he's still doing interviews. He actually just did an interview for a podcast that's on the Get Haunted Network as well. So we're going to have to try and get him on our podcast. That would be pretty amazing if we got him. You know, that would be pretty awesome to talk to somebody like Travis. But yeah, no, I hope his movie does come out, because I'd like to see his actual version of it. You know, unfortunately, being that it's more truthful and it's not going to have all the Hollywood bells and whistles, it's probably not going to be a blockbuster like Fire in the Sky was. But at least it'll be more truthful to what he says actually happened. I think that's about it, man.
Yep.
I think that's going to do it for us for this week. You have a paranormal experience, 845-600-0744. Check us out on all of podcasting platforms and YouTube and the Get Haunted USA Facebook page. Check out all of our socials, TikTok, and all that good stuff. And we're going to have a lot more stuff coming out to you guys soon, more interviews and more cool shows and cool content and stuff. And we hope you guys are there to experience it with us. So have a great week, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.